This is Wake Up Call.
Another kind of daytime radio program.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
All right. Let's do this.
Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right. Thanks for joining us as we continue hour number two on a Monday. Again, Final Four is now set for Houston. San Diego State and Florida Atlantic will play in one game. And then the Miami Hurricanes will battle the UConn Huskies in the other game with the national championship on Monday night. UConn is back from when. Here's the thing about UConn. When they go to the Final Four, they have a very good chance of winning the whole thing because that's what they do. There's not a lot of Final Fours in the history of UConn where they haven't emerged as the champion. They've gone to 5-1-4. That's a pretty good track record of getting the deal done when you arrive. But they haven't won a championship since 2014. And to be honest with you, when people say that, I don't know if they realize that you don't really win a lot of championships and as a college basketball school. Even if you're one of the top schools in the country, it is okay to go a decade without winning. This is that crazy of a tournament. I mean, when you think about, like, Kentucky, for example, and all the great teams that John Calipari has, the last time they won a championship was in 2012. So it's not like it happens all the time or it should happen all the time. And I think it's what makes kind of Mike Krzyzewski's incredible record of over 40 years. But how many did he pull down? Five, right? I mean, it doesn't happen all the time. It happens every now and then. So when people say, well, UConn hasn't won it all since 2014, well, it's not like they said 1972, right? It's within a little over a decade, which is, you know, it's about right as programs go through their ups and downs. Right? Kansas won a national championship last year. When was it that they won the championship before that? 2008? Right? It can happen. Lulls are expected. And that's why this tournament is what it is because the nature of it doesn't really lend itself to dynastic runs. I mean, you look back at a Duke team that won back-to-back championships, Florida that won back-to-back championships, but it just doesn't happen. It doesn't happen because, one, it's very hard to get the same group of people that went through your program to come back into your program when the money of the NBA is still dangling, right? It's not like players who used to commit for 4 years, you could count on that same kind of team. And then what happened is, as this whole tournament's been going on, as teams have been done with their college basketball season, boom, here's a guy going here. Here's a guy saying he's narrowed down his transfer teams to 15 schools, right? I mean, there's an ever-changing movement in college basketball. Is it too simplistic to say that the transfer portal is allowing this sort of thing to happen in the tournament where a Florida Atlantic could pop up or a San Diego State could pop up? I think it's just the nature of it, and I think we just caught a year where that happened. I don't think people were buzzing about a non-existent transfer portal back in the day. Well, it did. It existed, but there was a penalty to do it back when VCU went from the play-in game to the Final Four in 2011, and nobody knew who Butler was, right? I mean, like after a while, you come to the understanding that this thing happens. But I think Jerry Palm in the last hour made a very, very good point. It's not that it helps the way this tournament is right now, the way we've got a 9, 2 5s, and a 4, it helps when the number one seeds are out early, right? Look at, you know, Florida Atlantic. I'm not taking anything away from Florida Atlantic's run. It was great. It was absolutely great. But the way Florida Atlantic got through is because Purdue was out, right? So maybe they would have beaten Purdue straight up. But after they beat Memphis, right, what would they face? Fairleigh Dickinson, right? So it's getting to this point on your journey helps when you don't have to face some of the tougher teams in the region. Now, again, if Fairleigh Dickinson beat Purdue, it is likely that Florida Atlantic could have done so as well, right? I'm not taking anything away, but the path becomes a little easier. So as he mentioned, we have gotten the last 3 years where the most lower seeds beaten the higher seeds in the tournament. And again, I never know the rules with that. If you're a lower seed, aren't you a 1 or 2? A lower seed is usually indicating 16, 15, 14, and the higher seeds are the 1, 2s, and 3s. But number-wise, it's the exact opposite. But nevertheless, we've had more of those in the last couple of years. And I do think that there's a lot to be said about players being willing to go to other places to be more active in the program, going from a role player at Duke to a starter at another place, whatever those circumstances may be. But I also think, again, like Jerry and I were talking about, I just don't think you have the same level of intimidation that these big programs have. I think that again, student athletes, their life in general has been an entire lifetime of watching upsets happen in the NCAA tournament to know that it is possible and it can happen. Right. And so we've got to get that sort of out of the way and know that in every team that should know this, from Purdue to Arizona, right, to Alabama, every team should know when they enter this tournament, you're going to get everybody's best game, right? Best possible game. And yeah, maybe you win by 20 points, right? I mean, right. Maybe you blow out a Texas A&M Corpus Christi because in the end you've got more talent. But when you're in a tight game, be really careful because that tight game is nothing but momentum for the other person. But, you know, some people look at the three-point shot as being the great equalizer. Yeah, that's a possibility, too. You get some sharpshooters. It keeps you in a game that is where you're down by 10, 11 points, can quickly turn around. But at the same time, I just think this is this tournament, I need to see something down the road in 2 or 3 years to make a general statement that you're going to start seeing this time and time again. Right, I think this is just one of those years where we're getting a little bit better stories from the middle of the bracket rather than the top of the bracket. And the middle is exactly where these teams were, right? I mean, UConn's a 4. There's 2 5s and a 9. It's, you know, it's about the middle of the bracket. You may have had them go deep. You may not have, right? Maybe you had Gonzaga go to the Final Four, but you had them losing, you know, beating UConn along the way, right? I mean, I had that. I mean, I had Gonzaga beating UConn and going to the Final Four, right? So what I'm saying is that to look at this and say this is the new normal is, I think, one, crazy, because we just don't have enough examples yet to prove the point. Give me the Final Four that would be way out of the norm, right? So I'm going to say Florida Atlantic and Miami. Okay, because UConn's been to the championship. They've won the title. They've had 4 championships and 5 Final Four appearances. So in that game, I'll take Miami, who's never been to the Final Four before. And in the other game, I'll take the lower seed. I'll take Florida Atlantic. Okay, so now let's say Monday night we're watching Florida Atlantic take on Miami, which would be wild for South Florida, by the way. Crazy to have Boca versus Miami. It'd be nuts. But nevertheless, Coral Gables against Boca Raton. It would be crazy. But nevertheless, you mean to tell me that's the new trend in college basketball when the year before we had a final that had Kansas and North Carolina in it? Like, this is going to be the one that's the death of the Blue Bloods when 365 days ago we had Kansas take on North Carolina, and you want to tell me that that's dead? No, it isn't. It isn't. It's just the nature of this tournament. So slow down everybody thinking that this is now the new normal for college basketball. But revisit this in a couple of years if it is, right? If next year you're talking about Colorado State taking on, Montana, and then in the other bracket, if you've got a Final Four that is just entirely filled with 8s, 7s, 6s next year and the year after, then let's revisit this conversation. But if next year we got a Final Four that includes, you know, Duke, and it includes Kansas, and it includes whoever, UCLA, Gonzaga, like if it includes those schools, then you go, yeah, wasn't 2023 fun when Florida Atlantic was in this thing, right? That's like every now and then you're going to get it. I know we want to rush to these big time, big picture conclusions, but the reality of it is, if you sold me a year ago that the Blue Bloods aren't dead, and this is, you know, Kansas and North Carolina, my God, how much more Blue Blood can you get than Kansas, North Carolina? And then you're selling me Florida Atlantic, Miami, and San Diego State as 3 first-time participants in the Final Four as a new world order? No, I need more examples than that. I just need more examples than that. Because, again, this tournament, look, when South Carolina made its run to the Final Four a couple of years ago, they were a 7 seed. Right? They beat Marquette in the opening round, beat Duke in round 2, beat Baylor, beat Florida, right? Like, these things happen, right? You, I think Virginia Commonwealth, Shaka Smart's team back in 2011 is probably the best example of a team. They had to go to the play-in tournament in Dayton, Ohio, for crying out loud, and they ended up in the Final Four. I wouldn't change this tournament one bit. I wouldn't change it one thing. I love it the way it is. I'm not a huge fan of the first four in games. I'm not a fan of that. If you got rid of it tomorrow, I wouldn't cry. I don't want it expanded to 128. I don't think more is better. And to be honest with you, I was too young to remember when it was 32, but I'm sure when it went to 64, people lost their mind. But at the same time, this thing is perfect for what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to be unique. It is supposed to be entertaining. It is supposed to be inclusive, dragging all sorts of fan bases in because everybody's filling out a bracket. And it also is fair. It says, look, here's the deal, guys. For those of you in Dayton, you got to win 7 games. For everybody else, you got to win 6. There's no bye weeks. There's nothing. And no one's playing on their home court. You might be playing in near your home city. We don't mind doing that. If you're Alabama, you're playing in Birmingham in the first round, but you're not playing in Tuscaloosa. You're not playing at Coleman Coliseum. Right? I remember one year, Syracuse was put in the Syracuse region in the opening round of the tournament. And it was in the 80s. And they lost to Navy and David Robinson. And there was a lot of relief because it didn't seem very fair. But after that, no. No, you don't get to play in your on-campus place, no. And here's the thing. Everybody's got the same journey. And there you go. Is it the best way? No, it's the funnest way, yes. Good, the bad, and the dumb next as we continue on a Monday. It's Wake Up Call. Then we'll get into the NFL because we're a month away from the draft. I think today.
Wake Up Call continues now on the SportsMap Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
Oh, it's time for the good, the bad, and the dumb on a Monday. Boy, oh boy, are we excited. We had a whole weekend without it. Now we get it. Good, the bad, and the dumb. What's the good?
The good of the day. Not often that we talk about this team in the good. We usually save them for the bad or the dumb. But I got to give it to the Mets and Citi Field.
Okay.
Because this year, and this probably will be a trend if it's not already, but this year for just $150, you can take a guided tour of Citi Field, of all their top food vendors.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
So before the game, slap over a $150 bill if you got one. And yeah, they'll, you know, a guide will take you to each of the top vendors where you can taste everything that
okay,
they offer.
Okay, that's pretty good. But is that expensive given that you don't have an unlimited stomach?
Probably.
Meaning, like, by the time you reach the third
foods,
one, you're like, I'm kind of full.
And these foods, you might need to check with a doctor beforehand.
Yeah.
Just to make sure that it's okay. Because, like, some of their top food vendors, they got a loaded baked potato. I mean, it has stuff on there that I don't think has ever been put on a baked potato. They have a chicken sandwich, a fried chicken sandwich that is, you know, the bun is a donut.
See, that's what I'm talking about. These vendors sometimes go, we've taken a cheese pizza and wrapped it in a bacon double cheeseburger,
right,
topping it off with a taco and drizzled it with queso. Oh, it's a heart attack waiting to happen.
I mean,
it happens on the field, happen in your stomach.
I'm believing that you might get through one or two vendors and then you're tapping out.
Yeah, so
unless you are,
bucks might be a little steep.
Unless you're just going and just taking a bite of one thing and then tossing it, which
is
like a
judge
waste
on one of those shows.
Yeah.
Where they're like, oh, I taste
that
the
is
cumin.
Tasty. Let me move on.
Exactly. Now I gotta move on.
There's one place you can go to. It's called like Top Sundays or something like that. You can get a milkshake that's topped with a glazed donut.
Oh, see, what are we talking about here?
I mean, it looks incredible, but I can feel my arteries clogging just by staring at this photo.
I think I told you the story. My wife and I went out to dinner Tuesday at my daughter's restaurant that she works at.
Mm-hmm.
And my daughter's like, you guys got to get the cookie sundae. It's so good. Oh, I go, do you want a bite? She goes, sure. And I go, all right, I'll get the cookie sundae. So my daughter came over and she's like, you know, eating it real quick. And then I go, I can't. I got to stay away from sugar. I take a bite. I finish.
Hell yeah.
Like, what am I doing? I'm like, I'm not going to step away. It's a delicious cookie.
No,
same
and you
thing
and,
with these things.
And
I'm
here's
like,
the thing, right?
Just take a bite. It's got to do the whole thing.
Here's the thing. I mean, I'm looking at this milkshake. It's courtesy of Sunday Donuts, right? It's a milkshake topped with a glazed donut topped with popcorn.
Ugh.
So, yeah, you're finishing it.
Right, you are. Yes, you are.
Yeah, I'm looking at it like, yeah, I would eat the donut. You know, I would take a bite of the donut, then I would take another before I know the donut's gone. And then I still have the milkshake to wash it down.
Awesome. It's awesome.
So, yeah, but I like the idea of $150 and you get to go because, you know, when you walk through a stadium now, I mean, they still have the traditional hot dog, nachos.
Right.
You know, you can
right.
still get all that stuff. But then you are starting to see like, God, you know, I want to try that. I want to try this. But, you know, I can only make one decision because I'm not. You know, I'm not Steve Cohen walking through here and getting, give me one of everything.
Yeah, I agree. You know what? $150, ain't that all that bad to go sample all the food? Yeah. That's pretty cool.
But, right. I think you have to throw good food out.
Exactly. what's the bad of the day?
Tony, on February 6th of 2023, Kyrie Irving was traded to the Mavericks.
Yes.
Now, I don't know if you knew this. But that began the downfall of the Mavericks season. I know it's hard to believe.
It's falling apart. I know.
It's hard to believe that.
Completely a disaster.
No one saw that coming, right?
This is turning into an absolute terrible situation.
Yeah. So,
and you know what? People pegged it from the standpoint that those two players that they got rid of, Dorian Finney-Smith and Spencer Dinwiddie, were strong defensive players. This team is a mess.
Yeah, so right now the team is, since that day, have been 7-12. They are now on the outside looking in on the Western Conference playoffs. They're seeded 11th when we thought for a while there they'll just fall into the playoffs.
They might miss it.
They're very real going to miss it. I have a quote from Luka Doncic. I mean, he does have an accent, so it's hard to hear, but he explains his mood towards the team.
Yeah.
Is this as frustrated as you've been?
I mean, yeah. It's really frustrating. You know, I think you can see it with me on the court. Sometimes I don't feel it's me. I'm just being out there. You know, I used to have really fun smiling on court. But it's just been so frustrating for a lot of reasons, not just basketball.
What else is going on?
I didn't know how to talk about my prayer life.
Okay.
Just a lot going on.
Yeah,
what do you think it is? You think him and his girlfriend are fighting?
What
do you think is happening?
I mean,
you know what it is? It's this. Let's say you and your wife, you find a plot of land. Okay, and you find a plot of land, and you buy that plot of land, and you build a house, and you build it, and you put everything you want in there. You build it exactly the way you want. You put a swimming pool in the backyard. You got a beautiful fire pit. You've got 5 bedrooms, you know, bathrooms on every floor, whatever it is. You make it great. Walk-in shower and everything. You make it great. Then you decide, you know what would be cool? I'll rent out the house for a year. And you rent it out to somebody, and they come in, and they redesign the whole thing, and they turn it into a dump. They tear out walls, they tear out the foundation, they wreck the pool, and they tear it up. That's what Luka Doncic is feeling right now. He has built the Mavericks to be a serious playoff contender if they just had the right piece. And Kyrie came in and destroyed it the second he got there. Absolute disaster. Can you imagine being a young basketball player like Luka Doncic, one of the best players in the game, and you're looking around and you're like, I never asked for this. I never asked for this guy to show up. I never asked for the disconnection between him and I and the complete mess that our team is in now. We were in the playoffs a year ago. We made a strong showing in the playoffs a year ago. And now I just asked for a little help, and instead you tore the foundation of my house down to the ground. That's what they did. They might not make the playoffs. He has every right to go to Mark Cuban and go, fix this. You should have never signed on to this to begin with. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, trade him back.
You know, here's the thing, Mark.
Can we get our guys back?
Yeah. Here's the thing, Mark. For a guy that wants to run to the table and scream when we didn't ask who had the basketball against Golden State the other night, for a guy that's screaming and saying, this is the worst officiating I've ever seen, this is the history of the NBA, blah, blah, blah. Where were you on the entire Kyrie for two young players to borrow him for 10 seconds? Where were you on that? Did you sign up for that, or did that shock you?
And thinking that was going to make a, you know, be the championship run. I mean – Everywhere he's gone now, I guess after leaving Cleveland. Because, I mean, he, there was success at Cleveland, but he wasn't who he is now. But when he went to Boston, when he went to Brooklyn, where else did he go? It's just been a disaster ever since.
Exactly. I mean, Adam Silver has every right to say to Mark Cuban, before you complain about the officiating, why don't you do a little homework on your basketball team before you whine and cry to me about officials? Why don't you do some research into what exactly you were getting into in the whole Kyrie Irving thing?
Yeah. I mean,
because you didn't.
People are literally saying this is the Kyrie curse.
Yeah.
He goes to a team. I mean, he's like, you know, I don't know, name a supervillain that destroys worlds. That's who he is.
Boom. Plat. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
The dumb of the day is that, once again, a company is having to put out a PSA to TikTokers. Because there's TikTok trend happening, which is for a good frozen treat, put your fruit roll-up in the freezer.
Are you not supposed to do that?
No, you're not supposed to do that because most people, what they do is they just stick the wrapped package into the freezer and neglect the fact that a fruit roll-up is actually wrapped in plastic.
So the plastic freezes with the fruit roll-up.
Yes.
And you can't get it off.
And you can't get it off.
You can't take it off.
You can't open it.
You can't remove it.
And so fruit roll-ups actually had to issue a PSA via TikTok to let everyone know plastic is not for consumption.
Awesome. Awesome.
I want to put this up there with the Tide Pods.
Yeah, I do
too.
It's
like, how do you not know?
If you're Tide, can you imagine being in a room where you're like, guess what? We have to send out a message to people not to eat the detergent.
Yeah.
And wait, seriously? Yeah. See, they're actually eating. I don't know what to do anymore.
Yeah. So now Fruit Roll-Up is having to do the same thing. Because you and I both know we've enjoyed Fruit Roll-Ups since the late 80s. I think like the mid 80s is when it came out, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And you always knew that you start to unpeel it. And there's plastic, and you got to take it. You got to separate it from the plastic, which is easy. Your hands get sticky, but you know you're a kid; you don't care.
Exactly.
Now people are just sticking them in the freezer for a nice frozen treat, and they are slowly consuming plastic at the same time.
It's like when Outkast said, "Shake it like a Polaroid picture," and then Polaroid went, "Hey, you don't actually shake a Polaroid picture. Thanks for the publicity." But you don't actually do that.
They didn't make it develop faster.
Right? But you know what happened? When I heard them say that, I went, you don't? Because I kind of always thought you did.
Yeah, so did I.
I was like, I thought you shook it. I didn't realize you don't. Yeah. I didn't use Polaroid cameras very often, but when I did, I always shook it.
Are you telling me that the image didn't appear via Etch-a-Sketch method?
But at least when Polaroid did that, they were like, people actually do this? There's no reason why they shouldn't. But when you're Tide and you're like, don't eat clothing detergent, now we're in another level of dumb.
Wake Up Call with Tony D and Ron Culver continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Tony D and Ron Culver.
Okay, let's get rolling along this morning. So we were just talking about poor Dallas. I mean, let me calm down for a second because I'm blaming Dallas, but I get the understanding. Like, I understand why if you're a team that's like, we got to do something. Like, I get it, but I think that was, it's not a lot of basketball players that have that much talent like Kyrie has. And I think everybody sort of thinks that they're the team that's going to make it work, right? I think it's one of the reasons why there's always a coach that will take a player that's controversial, because there's always a coach that believes, well, in anybody else's hands, he would act this way or he would be this. But with me, he'll be a totally different player, whether it's good or bad, whether the stuff is negative from an off the field or off the court thing, or the negativity is that player might not be that good. You know, I always go back to Josh McDaniels was the right guy with the right ego to draft Tim Tebow, right? Like, if you were looking for somebody in the first round in 2010 to draft a guy that was controversial as a top pick, like nobody doubted his work ethic and he was sincere and he seemed like a good guy, but did he have NFL level talent at the quarterback position. And the argument went, no, he doesn't. He doesn't throw all that well, whatnot. But my God, he's a great worker and you could utilize him. You just needed a coach with an ego enough to go, first round picks are very valuable and you want to make sure you land it no matter where you pick, but I think I'll take a chance. And in Kyrie's situation, you could almost feel like the Mavericks were like, look, this Western Conference is ridiculous. It's too loaded. And we need to do something. And this, and remember, they made the deal for Kyrie before Kevin Durant was shipped to Phoenix. So so they were trying to get one up on the rest of the Western Conference that they felt was just a little bit more vulnerable in the playoffs, right? Dallas had Luka, but Denver had Jokic, right? Jokic. There were good one teams with one good player everywhere. And they were trying to be the team that had two really good players. But was it worth two guys that, one, were important to what you were doing at the time, gave you depth, and gave you great defensive presence that you need in the playoffs? No, it's not. But at the same time, I could almost see the Mavericks saying in hindsight, look, I know this isn't working. We're sliding down and we're just kind of blown up, right? We're falling and sliding all the way down the NBA Western Conference standings. I get it. But that obviously was not our intent. But our intent was, how do we break out of this logjam of teams that had one really good superstar and good supporting players, but they didn't have that second superstar, right? Again, Denver had Jokic, good players around him, but they didn't have that second superstar. Ja Morant is great in Memphis. He's a superstar, but everyone else, Desmond Bane, all those guys, good, but they didn't have a second superstar, right? And even as you look around going, okay, here's all these other teams, and maybe we have to be careful of a Clippers team when Kawhi and Paul George are both healthy. Maybe we had to be careful of a Phoenix team at the time that didn't have Durant, that still had DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker and Chris Paul, right? We still had to worry about that. So on the one hand, I can understand, but there was still a lot of people who didn't like this the second it happened. It's very, very easy for all of us to be Monday morning quarterbacking. It's what we mostly do in sports, right? And that's kind of the way we kind of dial it up. Like we were just talking about the official who made the call in the San Diego State Creighton game. So many of us believed we would not have blown the whistle there, right? But we don't know that. Like we don't know what we would have done if you saw a grab of the jersey and your instincts is to blow a whistle, if we would blow a whistle. But that's what we kind of do as sports fans. We kind of always go, the right thing was this. At the time, would you have done it? So if you were the general manager of the Dallas Mavericks, would you have pulled the trigger on a trade for Kyrie Irving, knowing Kyrie's background and the problems that they had in Brooklyn? Or did you believe in your own organization and the structure of your organization from Cuban all the way down to Jason Kidd as the head coach, to believe that Kyrie, who always wanted to get out of Brooklyn anyway, would be appreciative enough to get to Brooklyn? Now, the other thing is, why isn't that working, right? Well, Kyrie's not making controversial statements. He's not sticking out of games to go somewhere else and disappear, and he's not telling the team where he's at. He's not taking time off or something, or he's not doing anything that he did in Brooklyn that caused all these problems that made James Harden wanted to leave Brooklyn. So why isn't that those two working? Why isn't that they're working? Are they two alpha dogs that are just not coming together? Is the offense not being run through Luka the way Luka wants it to be run? Is this team now too predictable on offense, when before maybe there was something that sort of would kick in where Luka could score, but he also had other weapons around him that you didn't expect? Whereas now, if it's like you shut down Kyrie, you can't even get the ball to Luka. And even if you do, we got this covered as well. What is the circumstance in Dallas that's sort of allowing this slide to happen? So on the one hand, I sort of get why they would say, all right, you know what? Here's the thing. I don't know if he'll sign with us at the end of this season. We're going to try to create an environment where he'd want to sign up at the end of the season. But all of us in life have worked for organizations, or maybe some of you have, maybe some of you haven't. But most people have worked for at one time or another in a place where they went, you know what? This didn't work out the way I thought it was going to work out. This company is not the company I thought it was when I worked here. And so now I would love a fresh start somewhere else. And Would Dallas, would the Dallas Mavericks be the beneficiary of a Kyrie Irving that realized that and then said, yeah, you know what? I'm going to go to Dallas and all of this stuff is in the rearview mirror. I'm just going to go play basketball as hard as I can. You know, it's funny. Sometimes teams don't work out with a player and it's not even the player's fault when they arrive. Right? I mean, let's go back to the Lakers for a second. Russell Westbrook. Remember when the Lakers acquired Russell Westbrook and everybody went, ugh, why would you want to do? I don't remember Russell Westbrook being a problem. I just remember the Lakers being injured and terrible. but it's easy to go, yeah, that's the guy. That's the guy that's the real problem. They're just like, I just came to play basketball. I'm just hoping I could play basketball. And now he's on the Clippers, right? But at the same time, we don't know what's going on in meetings and locker rooms that are private, that are staying private, that there's no leaks into those sort of meetings. And what we just heard in the good, the bad, and the dumb, what Luca was saying, I don't think it's like me and my girlfriend are fighting or me and my family have a verbal disagreement on something or my agent and I we got some bad investment advice. Like, I don't think it has anything to do with that. Like, I think it has everything to do with basketball. I think he's miserable because of basketball, and I think he's miserable because the Mavericks are miserable, and now he's miserable. Like, I think it's all connected. It's not like his dog is sick. You know, it's none of that stuff.
No, I think you're right. I think it's all basketball related.
Yeah, when they asked him, why are you frustrated? And he said, well, I don't talk about my personal life. I think it's directly connected to what's going on in the field. Mm-hmm. Again, I don't think there's something else. Like, it's not like he invested in, you know, flower shops and then went belly up. You know
he says it's not just basketball.
Right.
And so it's like, you know, you got to look into that and go, okay, it's not the game. It's not how the team is doing. There's something else going on. All fingers are going to point to what's going on in the locker room.
I do too. I think there is. This was the biggest worry for people when the deal went down, right? Which is, Kyrie is the kind of player that makes it known when he doesn't like where he's at, and will act in a way that, like, he doesn't just kind of quietly go, "Can I get out of here?" He kind of quietly makes it so that you want to get rid of him too, right? So the thing is that if you come to a team that's like fourth in the Western Conference or wherever they were at the time, and now you're 11th and you're on the verge of being out of this thing, because the difference between like fourth and out is like a handful of games. That's it. I mean, it is an amazing Western Conference from that regard. I mean, like, I'm just taking a look at it now. So you've got two teams in the West of clinched playoff berths. You've got Denver and Memphis. So you've got Phoenix is 11 back of the Nuggets. And then you go all the way down to Oklahoma City. The 10th and final spot is 13 and a half back. That is just 2.5 games between having home court advantage in the first round of the playoffs to being out of this postseason, right? So Dallas is at 11th. That is out of the playoff picture. They are at one game behind Oklahoma City. Can you imagine going from a period of time where you thought, this is going to make us win the conference, to now being like, what the hell has happened to us? We're not even going to be in this thing if we're not careful. Yeah, it would make your personal life harder if you're Luka Doncic. It would make everything that you're doing, whether it's a relationship with your girlfriend or your agent or your family or friends or business partners, a lot harder when emotionally so much of it is on the failures of your basketball team. All right, we'll continue. It's Wake Up Call on a Monday.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing Final Four coverage all week long. I will be in Houston tomorrow.
What?
We'll be in studio at this time.
I know.
I'll be in studio in Houston. So excited. It leaves this afternoon. Take a little plane. So I got a question because I'm flying today.
Yep.
And my wife is a stickler on this. I know we talked about this before. 2 hours before your flight leaves. Is that still a thing?
No.
I don't think so.
Well, it depends.
My flight leaves at like 4 o'clock. So my wife goes, we got to get to the airport at 2. It means you got to leave the house at 1:30. I go, really? Phew.
What are you going to do for two hours?
What am I going to do? Like, what happens if I get there and I check my bag and then it's like, okay, there you go. Goodbye.
Sit in the airport restaurant and people watch?
Nashville is a popular place, but there are some times where I've walked right up to a waiting security guy who's just standing there going, come on in.
Yeah, I'm bored. No, that's what I was going to say. I think it depends on the airport.
Yeah.
Like when I've flown out of LAX, definitely get there 2 hours ahead of time. But when I've flown out of Burbank or, you know, Houston has two airports, but Houston Hobby, I think the longest I've ever waited in that TSA line is like 10, 15 minutes.
Exactly.
Tops.
Yeah.
I mean, there are times now I'll get to the airport. It's like, I want to get there a little bit early, but it's like an hour, hour 15 before my plane takes off.
When my wife and I flew last month to Florida, we did that whole thing. We got to get there early. We got to get there early. We're checking a bag. We got to get there early. And I'm like, okay. So we get to the airport. We check the bag. We go to the security. Guy's just standing right there, like two people ahead of us. That's it. Checks our IDs. Checks the thing. Beep, beep, beep. Bye. All right, go. And we get in line. Then there was another guy. Not all the TSA agents are as friendly, but this guy was super friendly. He was like, help. Hey, this, this, and this. Yeah, you don't have to do that. Don't worry about it. Got you here, this, or that. We get through. Then we get to that place where you got a little bench where you put your shoes on and your belt back on and you gather your things. You put them all back together again, right? Laptop goes back in the bag, zip it up. And then I go, okay, we have an hour and 45 minutes until our flight leaves. What do you want to do now? I don't know. Do you want to watch a movie? Like, what do you want to do? Like, what's hour and 45 minutes until the plane leaves?
I can't watch a movie because I'm saving that movie for the plane.
That's right. Exactly.
Also, I'm trying to save my battery.
So I have an idea. So I said, you know what? Instead of going to this little food cafe where we can get a couple slices of pizza or a chicken sandwich or a burger, how about we have actual dinner in a restaurant? You want to do that?
Mm-hmm.
She goes, okay. So we went into a restaurant. Table for two? Yes. Come right on in. Oh, there's no wait? No, it's not busy. Come on in. Sat down. Waitress came over, took our drinks, gave us menus, looked over the menus, got an appetizer, ordered food. Then we were done. Had an hour left to go until we were flightly, right? It's like, okay, yeah, what am I going to do for the next hour until I
one thing I've noticed about one thing I've noticed about airport restaurants, they're faster.
They are
than
much
your normal
faster.
Restaurants because it's like, yep. No, we got to get the food out. They pretty much know that what you were going to order and have it already cooked.
They are really quick. Like I ordered a burger. We got like fried pickles, and then we ordered I ordered a burger with fries. That's it. Just bacon burger with fries. And then that came out, like you said, it might have been pre-made. Like we got a bunch of these bacon burgers over here. Just grab them off the heat lamp.
Here's the deal, right? You're never going there and going, you know what I would like? I would like the filet mignon.
Exactly.
Let me put the order in for the souffle now. So that way it's ready by the time I'm ready to eat it.
Yeah, and then what are you going to do? Give us what do you do? Going to go to Yelp and give us a 1-star review? It's the only place to eat here.
Exactly.
Despite Chick-fil-A and the burger joint.
You want the food court food?
Yeah,
you want food court
or you want to eat here? Okay, what do you want?
You want something tasty? Or do you want, pizza that's been sitting underneath that heat lamp for the last, since yesterday?
So that's what's going to happen to me today. My wife's going to drop me off at the airport. I'm going to say my goodbyes. I'm going to get in there, and I know this for a fact.
And
I'm going to walk up, I'm going to check
thing,
in my bag,
right?
And I'll be looking around for something to do for an hour and a half.
Pre-9/11, when you were able to go to the gate, and you didn't have a ticket. I'll never forget this because I went with a buddy of mine. We were picking up one of our friends from the airport, and his plane got delayed. So his plane got seriously delayed, and we drove down there. This is pre-cell phone, so there's no way for him to get in contact with us. There's no way for us to find out. So we get to the airport, and then we see that it was like a two-hour delay. And I was like, well, we're not going to drive back, home.
Nice.
We're going to stick around and wait for him. We went in there. We sat at a bar for 2 hours. It was the best people watching ever.
Oh, it's the best. It's so fun.
Because you had like normal people coming to pick up their loved ones at the gate or dropping them off at the gate.
Yeah.
You don't have that anymore. Now you just have people getting off a plane and they're because that's the only way you can get back into that area. And they're just like, no, we're just trying to get out of here.
It's funny.
The people watching is gone.
People don't even take you to the security entrance anymore. They'll just dropping you off outside the airport.
Yeah.
Like when we drop off our son to go to Florida, we just go, here you go, boop, goodbye. And like, I'm in the driver's seat. I'll see you in a couple months. Bye. Like, I remember being, taken to the airport by people. Like, my buddies would park the car.
Yeah.
Go with me. Like, you got good? Yeah, good. Yeah, see ya. All right, man, take care. Well, then go back to the parking and leave.
I know. I mean, a lot of times, like, if I drop off my mom at the airport when she came out for a visit, I'm home before she's even on the plane.
I know. Exactly. You zip up, you drop them off.
And vice versa.
You
know,
off you go.
She drops me off at the airport whenever I'm in L.A., and she's home. She's, like, texting me from home. I was like, well, I just got home. I'm like, I got another 45 minutes to kill.
Yeah, you're totally right. You're totally right.
In an airport that has – Burbank Airport, I mean, you literally just go there just to fly because there is nothing.
I told this years ago, my family, my grandfather had passed away in West Virginia. I was living in Colorado at the time. My sister was in Los Angeles. And we met in Houston, right? So we got flights, and we happened to be in Houston at the same time to change flights. I guess whatever flight is big in Houston, whatever their main hub, Continental or something.
Southwest.
Whatever it was, Southwest, whatever. But that was their hub. So both of us landed in Houston at the same time. So we met. We saw each other. Like, I was in the gate. She was coming out of a gate. I waited for a flight. I go, hey, our flight to West Virginia doesn't leave until like 6 o'clock. So we hung around, and there were two flights that were leaving. And one was going at like 5 o'clock, and the other one was going like at 8:30. So like we were on standby for this flight for like a last minute kind of. My aunt helped us get flights because she worked for the airline. So they announced. They said we've got a couple people on standby. They announced my sister's name, and they didn't announce my name. And my sister just walked on the plane and left me. Left me in Houston. Like, they said, the next flight is practically empty. Like, the next flight to Charleston, West Virginia is practically empty. My sister, they called her up. She goes, bye, I'll see you there. I go, okay, I guess I'll just be here for the next 3.5 hours.
Now, is her first name higher in the alphabet than yours?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know why they couldn't have put us together. Like, hey, look, they got two people last names. Maybe they're related. Maybe we should call the fourth person on the list.
I mean, at the very least.
You just grabbed the ticket and like, see ya.
If I saw those two names, I would have assumed you were married.
Right.
Because I'm not together, being able to tell. And it was like, oh, they should probably, or maybe, you know, husband doesn't want to travel with wife. That's fine.
I was like, don't worry. I got a book I'll just read again. No problem. And I'm sure there's something on TV. I'll just watch that. And maybe I'll just go to the Chili's that's in here and just eat again. What are we going to do for 3.5 hours now? I'm waiting for this flight. It's crazy. But yeah, but like you said, back before 9/11, if you went and your flight was delayed, sometimes your buddy, like you said, would just hang out.
Oh, my God, all the time.
Just like, yeah, why not? Just hang with you. We'll go get a bite to eat, maybe have a drink.
I mean, we had a blast. I mean, we almost sat there after that time. We were having, my buddy and I were having so much fun. We said, God, well, you know, we should just come back here.
Yeah.
Because the other thing, too, is like, you know, you might be able to score here. You got like a few minutes left, you know, before.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
No strings attached.
No, not at all. Yeah, it's good. So. Anyway, so I'll be in Houston tomorrow.
Tomorrow.
So in the studio, so it'll be kind of fun. It'll be so new for me. I'll be like, wow, this is, wow, does everything work? Do I, it'll be great. It'll be fun. I'm looking forward to it. Plus, I'm looking forward to a fun week of Final Four hype.
Final Four hype. I haven't really seen it yet in Houston, Final Four hype. I think a lot of it's reeling from the fact that, you know, Houston's not going to be there.
Right, I know. That had been a blow. And Texas isn't in it either. Other thing I thought about was last night was, man,
well,
it stinks
at least
Houston's
got Texas.
Be, but at least Texas. Oh, no. Nope.
God, Texas was in cruise control.
They were in cruise control, and then they just let it go. The fact that Miami got back into that game with no three-pointers is not like is unbelievable to me.
Right.
It's unbelievable that they managed that. And, I mean, like,
give
it
to Miami, just making sure that you know there's no Texas Dream in the Final Four.
Yeah, exactly.
Just knocked out both of them. We'll take care of you. We'll take care of you.
Man, that Miami team is a lot tougher than I thought. To think that I had them losing to Drake in the first round. It's one thing to be like, well, then they lost in round three. I thought they would lose to Drake, and not only that, now they're in the Final Four. And Miller, God bless him, who's 13 for 13 from the free throw line and 7 for 7 from the field. That's Leitner-esque.
Yeah. Yeah, it was ridiculous.
Perfect from the floor.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
I mean, you don't see that very often. So, Jim Larrañaga, congratulations to him getting the Miami Hurricanes to the Final Four. We'll talk more in hour 2, hour 3, I should say, coming up next as we continue. It's Wake Up Call on Sportsman Radio.